Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma, and online at kpcg.fm. We're actually recording this episode in advance because Monday, the day you are listening to this, hopefully is Labor Day, and we have this day off. Well, God's work is really synonymous with a lot of physical beauty. Not just physical beauty, but growth, too. And those two things go together. As God's work grows, it tends to be in the most beautiful way possible. You can look around on this campus. You can look around on the sister campus, Edstone, England. And you can see a lot of physical beauty. And you can see a lot of buildings and a lot of different operations of the work taking place on those two campuses. And we also have regional offices around the world too. And those are always the highest quality facilities that can be afforded. Well, back in 1967, Mr. Armstrong, the late Worldwide Church of God founder Herbert W. Armstrong, had to sort of explain to coworker letters why this was the case in the work. Why is the church always building? And why is it always so pleasant to look at? He had to actually answer this. And so I thought it was just a really fascinating subject. It's something that can really help us understand why the work is the way it is today. Here's what Mr. Armstrong writes in that coworker letter. This is August 28th, 1967. So we receive 3,000 to 5,000 letters every day, more than 100,000 letters a month. Now, how would you read and answer all those letters without a room or office or place to work? How would you print more than a million copies of a magazine like The Plain Truth, and tons of booklets, and thousands of copies of the Bible Correspondence Course, without buildings and rooms for your presses, folding machines, and vast amounts of equipment we have to use? How would you write the articles and edit and plan a magazine, lay out the pages, arrange the pictures, etc., without a place to work in? And could you, just one person, read 3,500 letters every day, answer them, do all this printing, and mailing carload after carload, I mean large freight cars, of literature every month, alone, by yourself? I think the way he put it there really does help to explain why the work builds and why it keeps growing. It has to keep up with demand. So there's that other element there of beauty as well, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But just the fact that it grows should make sense. God is behind it and blessing it and opening up a lot of great opportunities for the work to expand. Here's what Mr. Armstrong continues here. The work expands faster than our property and building expansion program does. So no matter how fast we build, no matter how many new operations of the work are opened up, it doesn't really keep up. It's not really sufficient with the work itself. Mr. Armstrong shows the contrast here between God and between God's work. He says here, as I have said many times, when God himself does something solely by his own great power, he does it in a stupendous, mighty, and perfect way. Like, for instance, the creation of the sun, the earth, the vast universe. But when he does something through humans, if it truly is God's doing, the humans must start the very smallest, like the grain of mustard seed, but it continues to grow and grow until it becomes the greatest. So, obviously, the work starts very small. There's proof of that in the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, and you can read that for free at thetrumpet.com. It starts really small. It might start on a radio station that barely gets through one valley in Oregon and reaches maybe 100 or 200 people. And maybe it starts out with a few dozen copies of a magazine. And yet, look how much it can grow. And obviously, as the work grows, buildings must be erected, campuses must be purchased, the work must grow even in that physical aspect too. And I think in a way it is sad that Mr. Armstrong had to address these criticisms. And that's really what it was. These were people who were helping the work, but were really expecting everything to be done exactly how they personally wanted it done. You know, they had seen a lot of pictures of the college campuses in the various publications, and they thought, wow, this sure is beautiful, and I might even say extravagant. That's the way those people thought about it. And they thought, maybe this is a bit over the top, maybe this is too much. And Mr. Armstrong had to tell them, well, wait, obviously in these publications we're showing you the very best of what we have. We're photographing the best of our campuses and not showing you the dilapidated shacks where a lot of our workers are crowded into the same place to try to do the work. And it's not even hardly possible. He writes in this coworker letter, this is from August 28th, 1967 again, how he had to purchase these plots of land that might have only been 40 or 50 feet wide. And each of them tended to have maybe one or two small buildings on them, worn out, hardly even usable. And this is how he would add to the campus that they already had there in Pasadena, California, just by purchasing these small plots and adding them to the current campus. These plots of land were not of the highest quality. They were not cultivated. The buildings on them were far below standard. And yet the work had to make do with that as long as possible until a higher standard could be reached. In fact, a lot of these plots of lands were considered borderline the slum of Pasadena, and he had to buy it up and turn it into something that resembled the world tomorrow. It's actually a pretty inspiring transition. Mr. Armstrong says here, "I think you should have enough faith in the living Christ, who is the head of this great work of God, and who guides, directs, and blesses it, to know that he would not put or leave a man at the earthly head of his work who would mislead or deceive you, or who would have such bad judgment that he would embark on any unneeded or extravagant spending spree." So you could tell here Mr. Armstrong was a little bit hurt by this. Obviously, a lot of people around the world, many thousands of people, support the work today. And it is, in a way, like we are all shareholders. But it's very different in another sense, because shareholders expect to have a report of what their preferred businesses are doing, what is being done with their money, for example. And they expect to have a lot of say in the direction of the company because they are contributing with their money. So these companies, in a way, are accountable to their shareholders. They're accountable to whatever the shareholders might want. It's very different in God's work because the work is accountable to what God wants. It's God's work. It's not our work. We can't attach our names to it. We can't decide every detail, every aspect of what happens in the work. We have to find where the one true work is, support it with all our hearts, and trust that God will direct it the way that he pleases. And that should really be satisfactory for us. We shouldn't be making demands of exactly how our contributions are used. we should just pray with all our heart, support with all our heart, and trust that it will work out. Here is what Mr. Armstrong writes in this coworker letter. God himself set the character standard for the physical properties of his college and his earthly headquarters where his work is conducted. So now he's starting to talk about why the work doesn't just need to expand, it also needs to produce beauty. As it grows, it needs to grow beautifully. He says here, these truly fine and magnificent properties came providentially. They do not represent reckless management. They do represent the kind of properties the living Christ has shown us he wants for his work. God is a God of quality. That's something that we have to realize too. God is a God of quality. He doesn't just want us to grow, but he wants us to grow in a way that is of the highest standard. Mr. Armstrong continues, co-workers, we need to realize it is not wrong to have the finer things if one can afford them. In our case, God put these finer properties in our hands at less cost than any cheap, poorly constructed, unsightly properties, giving us the same usable space could have been purchased for. So the work was expanding, but God was working financial miracles so that quality properties or quality equipment or quality buildings were purchased at much lower than the cost. And if the land or whatever it was wasn't of the right standard, it would have been cultivated to raise it to that standard. There's always a lot of work going into it and God working a lot of financial miracles. Mr. Armstrong said, do you think God wants us to live in slums, ghettos, or in drab, depressing, unbeautiful surroundings? He does not want us to live beyond our means, but he does want us to use our minds actively and alertly, and to work hard and faithfully, and to improve our surroundings, even as we improve our spiritual character. Mr. Armstrong then points out Revelation chapter 4 and Ezekiel chapter 1. So Revelation 4 describes God's throne room in blinding, brilliant radiance, and the same as God's vehicle in Ezekiel chapter 1. Highest quality, more than we could even imagine. That is God's standard, and that's the standard we're trying to reach in the work, both through growing and through growing beautifully. I actually was just doing some research for this program, and I found another article that quoted this same coworker letter. I wasn't even expecting that. But this is an article titled, Why the Coming Utopia Will Be a Feast for the Senses. This is written by Ryan Malone, Mr. Ryan Malone, on September 20th, 2010. So in less than 2 months, God's people are going to be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. This is a festival that pictures the 1,000-year rule of Christ on earth after his return. And it's going to be a time where the whole world is renewed. Every bit of the world is going to be more beautiful than it was before Christ's involvement. Just from a visual standpoint, it will be stunning. The land will all be fertile. There won't be so much unusable land like deserts. There won't be cities that are basically gigantic slums. Those will all be rehabilitated. It will just be a visually pleasing world for that 1,000 years. And that's the type of standard we're trying to reach now. Here's what Mr. Malone writes in that article. The beauty of our surroundings and environment is truly important to God. God has spiritual surroundings, but even the material can inspire him. The angels even shouted for joy when they saw the creation of the earth. Mr. Malone points out how a lot of plants, even fruit or vegetable producing plants, first develop flowers. Before they develop anything edible, they're developing something that is pleasant to the sight and the smell. It is aesthetically pleasing. It's not just about the utility of it, using it for physical food, but even just the beauty of it is important to God. Genesis 2 verse 9 shows that God made a physical garden for man, and he made in it to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. So in this Garden of Eden, right at the beginning of the Bible, you can just see that God made it beautiful first, and then he made it where humans could survive off of it. The trees were first pleasant and then good for food. Mr. Malone writes, God isn't just into functionality. The tree's fruits weren't simply good nutritionally. Like I said, he does also quote this this coworker letter of Mr. Armstrong's from 1967 and another one from 1969. He says here, physical beauty was created to point man to spiritual beauty, to quality and godly character. That's a beautiful point. That's something that we need to understand if we're really going to support the work with the right attitude. Rather than getting bitter about different expansions or different projects being undertaken, why not just realize the standard we're trying to reach and how no matter how well we do physically reaching that standard, it will still be far short of God's spiritual standard. We'll always be trying to reach that level. Here's what Mr. Malone writes. What does a corroded building represent? What does a run-down house represent? It represents slothfulness and idleness. He quotes Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 32. Those growing in spiritual character dress and keep their physical property because they know the meaning behind it. They want quality and character to describe not only their spiritual, unseen character, but every aspect of their lives, from their clothes to their homes. So even beyond the different branches of the work and the college campuses and the plane and everything else, even the way we dress, even the way we present ourselves personally, even the way our homes look, it should be of the highest quality we can possibly attain. Mr. Malone says, physical beauty can create an environment conducive to higher thought, learning, and spiritual growth. And he gives a lot of details about how environments in the world are not conducive to thought and learning and growth. Think about an inner city. Think about homelessness crises in places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. Are those places where people can walk the streets freely without fear? Can people really go into Chicago today and be free of fear of some sort of a shooting taking place? Obviously, the environments need to be cleaned up. We can't allow homelessness or slums or ghettos. Those have to be fixed. And God really does have solutions to that. Thankfully, on this campus, it really is a picture of the wonderful world tomorrow. This is a peaceful environment. This is a beautiful environment. And it's so relaxing and enjoyable just to take a walk around and to think and to try to really reflect God's way of thinking. And in this type of environment, we really can learn. We can learn so much more. We can learn so much more easily, too. And we have to think really about what this is all ultimately leading us to. Doing the work, trying to reach this high standard, constantly growing, like Mr. Armstrong said, almost 30% a year, every year for 33 years. There's a reason we're doing all this, growing and building constantly and always trying to achieve the highest levels of beauty. The reason for it, it can be found in Isaiah 51, verse 16. Because we are doing what we are doing today, we are going to be able to help God plant the heavens, will help him build and repair and beautify the entire universe. Because we build and grow and beautify today, we will get to do the same thing in the world tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.